Willie and D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 of the game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Bingen, breaking down the Titans' 24-17 loss to the New York Jets, dropping the Titans to 0-2. I believe they are one of nine teams in the NFL that are 0-2, and we'll talk about that as well. But the Titans 0-2 after another 24-17 loss, this time to the New York Jets. And before we get to the wide receiver translator with Derek Mason, Adam in Portland is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, go ahead.
Hey, Adam. So, yeah, I can't even with Will Levis right now, dude. Like, I can't. And what's funny is if you watch Brian Callahan's press conference, he can't either, dude. Like, he's so sick of it. He all but said, he's a big boy. I didn't tell him to do those stupid things. Like, that's basically what he wanted to say. Like, I'm not coaching that. Y'all don't point it at me. Like, can you imagine being a head coach and your first, like, you've waited your whole life to be head coach of a team and your quarterback was Will Levis those first two games? Like, oh, my God. What do you do with that, man? Like, I mean, run 90% of the time, start stacking up tight ends. I don't know the answer to it.
It's a good question, because I think last year, when you said, like, run it a million times, Adam, I do think that's kind of what they were trying to do last year, just run the heck. Like, even when Malik Willis was in there last year, he was like, well, we'll just run the heck out of it and see if we can have great defense. I think the frustrating thing for Callahan has to be, and I think I'm seeing it, D-Mace, you and I and Adam were just having this discussion during the break. I like the way the plays are designed. I'm encouraged by the scheme. I think Brian Callahan is as advertised as a guy who can put together a really good modern scheme, balanced runs, controlled passing game, get the percentage, like you mentioned in the first hour, get the completion percentage up. You see what he's trying to do. So the frustrating thing is he is giving him lanes to have success. And it's just these big plays are just knocking it back.
Yeah.
But I like what he's doing. Like, I think Callahan is doing exactly what he was hired to do. It's just that Levis has got to take it and drive down the lane, and that's there for him.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, listen, for those of you who follow basketball, it's like Stockton and Malone. Stockton is Brian Callahan, and he's giving Will Levis these plays. It's like, dude, if you just be patient and play boring football, man. These would be layups just about every time. Come on. Or we're going to get fired and we're going over the free throw line, man. Just look at you. You're completing 60-something% of your pass. Just keep doing it, man. I'm going to call. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Oh, hell, you did that? Oh, damn. Here we go again. Now we got to draw something. Now we got to go back to phase one again and start all over. Because I'm giving you these great passes. I'm Magic Johnsoning you all over the place, and you are just fumbling the ball or throwing errant passes or overthrowing guys. Dude, I'm giving you the blueprint to be successful, and you're not being successful in it.
It's time for the wide receiver translator.
Wide receiver translator.
Who supplied the voice for that?
I love it.
I think that was one Caroline Fenton.
Yeah, it might have been Caroline.
Sounds a
lot
younger. Yeah, in that
indeed
clip.
It was.
We remastered it, and everything else.
I was like, did you go to a preschool?
Did you get her while she was in preschool?
if you play it backwards, I think you get like secrets of LSU life on campus or something like that. You know.
Feels very Charles Manson-like if you play it backwards. Was it the Beatles that he was playing backwards?
I think the Beatles had some of that going, yeah.
Either way.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with the play after Will Levis's first turnover, which was the deep ball to Treylon Burks that was intercepted by Braden Echols of the New York Jets. Now, this is the thing that frustrated me about this play, and of course then we'll hand it over to Derek. I went and looked at the measurements of Treylon Burks versus Brandon Echols. Burks has 4 inches and 46 pounds on Brandon Echols. Burks is 4 inches taller and 46 pounds heavier. One would think, and I am not the expert, you are, Derek. One would think that with that size discrepancy, that Treylon Burks would be able to come down with that ball. And this is something I want to get your opinion on. I saw this circulating around social media last night from Matt Waldman, who is a football analyst who I was unaware of. until yesterday. And he had a tweet and an accompanying video breaking down that play where he says, quote, Treylon Burks still doesn't know how to attack a contested vertical route. And the point I believe Waldman was making was when Burks went up, he was underhanded, mm-hmm. had his elbows in. And I believe Echols had his hands up when Echols went to put his hands up to prevent the catch. Their hands were on the same level, as opposed to Treylon Burks stretching out overhand and using that size discrepancy to his advantage. So when you look at this play, let's start with the pass. What did you think of the pass to Burks? And then we'll go to the attempt at a catch.
It was a bad pass. It was a bad pass. There's no reason. As strong as your arm is, Will Levis, as much as you want to show it off to everybody else, there's no way that that pass should have been underthrown. You didn't get any pressure. You were able to step up in the pocket. You didn't have a complete follow-through on the pass. You tried to throw it with all shoulder instead of using your hips and everything else and getting your body into the throw and throwing it high into the front pylon. Throw it high to the front pylon, or better yet, throw it high to the back pylon. You know why? Because now you don't give the safety the ability to, you know, get underneath it. That corner is running from an angle. He's not going to be able to get it. And Treylon Burks can run under the football. This is another instance where you throw the guy open. Don't throw it to him. You threw it to him. And I wish Wegman or whatever the hell his name is,
Matt Waldman,
would have explained that part. As a receiver, we're taught, take the high angle. The quarterback's going to throw it to the back pylon or the front pylon, and you run and get it. Again, Will Levis, you can throw the ball a million yards, but on this particular play, you didn't throw it when you had somewhat, you had a clean pocket basically to step up and to launch the football. You didn't do that. You made the pass a 50-50 pass when it didn't need to be a 50-50. It should have been more like a 70-30, meaning a 70% chance of you catching this and a 30% chance of it getting intercepted or incompleted. Because if I throw it long, I allow Treylon Burks to then run underneath the football. Don't give the defensive back an opportunity to play. This was a hell of a play by the cornerback. Treylon, you know how hard it is? Now I'm transitioning to Treylon, because I just transitioned
to out answer of your Will question. Levis. No, I don't know how it is.
But I'm trying to explain this to a guy like Wegman or Wigman.
Matt whatever, Waldman.
Waldman, excuse me.
Wegman's is a grocery Waldman. Store.
I want to explain to a guy like Matt Waldman that you know how difficult this catch. It's a 50-50 ball. That's what it is. So if it's a 50-50 ball, how do you then blame him for not making a catch and the interception?
That's one specific thing that he's trying to get at, though. Because I do see it with Burks. Mm-hmm. There are certain guys that are just, and I see outfielders in baseball that have this gift, but the great wide receivers, they just are able to adjust, and they call it the high point, right? Use his, go up and get that. Mm-hmm. He was kind of getting contested and pushed. So do you think that's a fair criticism?
It's not a fair criticism because when you're running to the pylon and the ball is severely underthrown, it's hard to then. You see all the great. Jefferson does the same thing. If he can't go up and get it at his high point, he allows the ball to come into his body and then make
which
the
Burks
catch.
Had. He which did, Burks he did had have it the for ball. A second. Yeah.
If the defensive back made a good play, Treylon Burks has the ball. Now he has to figure out a way to contort his body once he get it and sort of twist. Even though that I'm saying that and I'm thinking like, is that realistic to do? But I don't want anyone to seem like, oh, I'm just giving Treylon Burks a pass. I am not. My thing is with him, I've always said that he needs to play bigger. He needs to impose his 6'2", 6'3" frame on any and everybody that comes up against him. But in no way that you can sit here and say, oh, I blame Treylon Burks solely for this.
Right.
One, you got a clean pocket. You're able to step up. Throw the ball to the back pylon. He's running a deep corner. Again, people, he's running a deep corner route. He took an inside release. He faded. He went toward the goalpost, and then we're taught take the high point on the corner route. Why? Because the corner's going to be underneath you, and you got a safety coming over the top. So take the high point, and the quarterback is supposed to lead you, people. Stop blaming this on Treylon Burks. Like I'm done. If the quarterback throws a better ball, it's either completed or it's incomplete. He may drop it. Now, I don't know. He may drop it. But at least you're not putting him in the situation that he's in now. Again, I'm not saying that this is a uncatchable ball, but to solely put all of the responsibility on Traylon and say, oh, he should have caught that one. Do y'all know how difficult that pass is when you're running 100 miles per hour, you're trying to jump up over two guys?
It's so much more difficult than people realize. Saying.
I think my issue with it is he almost did come down with the ball, but he was out-muscled by someone who is 4 inches shorter and nearly 50 pounds
But higher. It has nothing to do with your height and weight in that situation, because even if I come down, even if I manage to high point it, which it's very difficult to high point when you're falling away from the ball, you got to turn. It's very difficult. But let's say he does it. He goes up and he high points the ball. You know, as he's coming down, you know whose hand's still right there? The defensive back hand is still right there because he's taught. Keep your hand there as he's bringing the ball down. Then you rip through. That's all he did because the catch was there. He just played through the catch, meaning the defensive back, which that's his job.
We have to give him some credit for that.
It was a hell of an interception.
And I think he was a little bit lucky that they just fell the perfect way for him leverage-wise to be able to kind of steal it from him after Burks initially had it. I did think he had it.
No, he did have it, but his arm was in between the ball and trailer.
And what I'm trying to wrap my arms around is, okay, I do think there are some guys that once they have it, you are not getting it from them.
Oh, of course.
Right? And Burks, he lacks in that a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's still sort of collapsing. He's not strong. Like, I think of a Randy Moss. Like, there are guys that know how to kind of make that little wiggle, to keep you on their back and know how to just get the hands up, snatch it, or once it hits him in the shoulder, hits him in the chest, boom, he gets his two hands up. It's like claws. You're not getting it from him. That's where Burks is still
that's falling short. That's my issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, Will Levis, people got to remember, Will Levis made that same exact throw earlier in the game to Calvin Ridley. It was the same exact throw, same exact route, I guarantee you. He went inside as if he was going to the post, and he broke back out to the corner. And Calvin Ridley did exactly what you're supposed to do. Take the high corner. Will Levis did exactly what you're supposed to do as a quarterback. Throw it to him, throw him open. Don't throw it to him. Throw him open. And what happened? It
Ridley
went right through his hand.
Yeah.
Why then you have another? Brian Callahan saw that play was open. He waited for a while, a couple quarters, and he went back into that exact same play from a different formation probably with a different guy. And the same results would have happened had Will Levis stepped through his throw and thrown it where he was supposed to. He grossly underthrew that ball. Why he did that, I have no idea. He tried to make a perfect pass instead of just throwing the football and allowing your receiver, as you did with Calvin Ridley, allowing your receiver to run underneath that ball. In no way should that have been a contested catch.
Yep.
That should have been either I'm catching it and running in the end zone or falling, or is it incomplete pass.
It's a great point because, as we've talked about, one of Levis's best strengths is he can make those throws, which are very difficult. You got to have a strong arm to throw it on that angle, that deep, and be effective. But because it makes the defense guard the whole width of the field and a big length of the field. And in theory, that should open up. The fear of that, if he can hit a few of those, should open up some other things underneath, which they're trying to do to get that completion percentage up. So they need that play in the arsenal there. But that's the tough thing about it is – Levis has the strength to make that throw, but he's got to have the accuracy to hit on enough of them.
And so I'm sorry, Eric. If I'm hearing you correctly, the way that Treylon Burks went up to catch that ball with his hands underhanded like this was a product of the ball placement, not of a technique issue with Treylon Burks? Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a technique. Again, do you, in an ideal situation, do you want your receiver to go up and catch it at his high point? Absolutely, you want that. But in reality, it doesn't happen that way a lot. If he makes that catch, what is it, Weidman?
Waldman. You're coming up with many names. Matt Waldman.
Waldman. If he makes that catch, Matt Waldman isn't saying anything, because if he was truly critiquing him whether he makes that catch or not, he would go back and say, hey, listen, it would have been a much easier catch had he went up and got it at his highest point rather than allowing it to come to his body and then making the catch. But he didn't, but I'm sure he would have. Only reason he chose to sort of make those comments because the ball was intercepted. That was a good play by the defensive back. It was a 50-50 ball the way Will Levis threw it. Treylon had it. He just got it stripped away from him. Basically, that's what it is. That's what it was. I'm not putting the blame solely or I'm putting the blame more on Will Levis for the type of ball he threw rather than put it on Treylon. And I know why everybody's putting it on Treylon Burks, because he has not done anything since he became the guy that replaced A.J. Brown. So anything that he doesn't do, people are going to blame on him. That's just the way it is.
The full tweet from Matt Waldman is, quote, Treylon Burks still doesn't know how to attack a contested vertical route. The hands position undercuts his strength, length, and ability to protect the ball as he secures this. And he mentioned that he mentioned it to someone pre-draft, and that hasn't changed. 615-737-1025. We will continue with the wide receiver translator on another big play from yesterday's game. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game. Join Jarrett Stillman, Chris Sanders, and our Derek Mason at John Bon Jovi's this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 for the pregame show. They'll break down the Titans Week 3 matchup against the Packers and give you the latest updates before the game. The pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. I'm impressed that I can get through that without being tongue-tied. You try saying Blue Note Juke Joint over and over and over again. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan. We're sticking in the wide receiver translator. We were just looking and discussing Treylon Burks's the interception from Will Levis, true Treylon Burks. Now we're going to switch gears and look at the 40-yard touchdown pass to Calvin Ridley. As I mentioned earlier in the program, according to Next Gen Stats, that pass had a 16.5% completion probability, the most improbable completion of Levis's NFL career. Ridley had just 0.7 yards of separation from Sauce Gardner when the pass arrived. And I thought this was another interesting note. Gardner allowed 5 receptions for 97 yards and a touchdown when targeted against the Titans. His most yards allowed as the nearest defender in a game in his career. So from that perspective, Sauce Gardner had the worst game of his NFL career, allowing 5 receptions for 97 yards and a touchdown. But that play to Calvin Ridley, as Derek mentioned at the beginning of the show, it was an interception-worthy play. I was certain in live time that it had been intercepted, but Calvin Ridley comes down with it. So let's start with that. Let's talk about how Ridley was able to make that catch and what he was able to do from the throw from Will Levis, holding off Sauce Gardner. Was it Chuck Clark? Is that the name of the safety who kind of came in at the last minute, was able to, was able to get a hand on that ball despite a lot of pressure. So Derek, when you look back at that play, what did Calvin Ridley do to come down with what was a pretty statistically improbable catch?
He played through the
wide receiver translator.
There we go.
We forgot that. Sorry, guys. Now you can go ahead.
He played through the play. He finished the play. That's exactly what he did. That's what we're taught as players. Play through the play. Don't give up on a play. And Calvin Ridley didn't give up on a play. He had Sauce Gardner beat by not even a half a step, but he was on top of him. And in this league, that is open. Okay, you just want to give the opportunity, a receiver an opportunity to catch the ball. Again, that ball, I do believe, was thrown late. He stared it down. And for all intents and purposes, it should have been an interception. I'm sure that's a play that Brian Callahan is going to go to this morning and show Will Levis. Listen, one, great catch by Calvin Ridley, but you can't make that throw late like that when you're staring down a guy and the safety is sitting there. Under any other circumstances, that is either an interception or an incomplete ball, and you're punting, okay? But the football guys were on your side. Calvin Ridley played through the play and ended up making an improbable catch probable. That's exactly what he did. So kudos to him. But in no way am I letting Will Levis off the hook. It shouldn't have been thrown. And again, I know Titan fans are going to say, that doesn't matter. It was an interception. It was a touchdown. I get it. But what happens next week when he tries to make that throw again and then is intercepted? Are y'all now saying he shouldn't have made that throw? Well, he shouldn't have made the throw to yesterday. But, you know, for whatever reason, it got through the safety and the corner. And Calvin Ridley played through the play and ended up being a touchdown. But he's not putting guys in positions to truly succeed. You can't throw a ball that late down the field like that. And, yes, you scored a touchdown this time. But what happens the next time when you try to make that throw? I think next time it's going to be intercepted. And then people are going to be looking and say, well, he can't make that throw. Well, he got a false sense of reality because he was able to complete that pass the game prior.
D-Mace, I like what I'm seeing for the most part with Ridley.
Oh, I do,
he's
too.
He's not a superstar, but he's very good. And he was one catch away from another big play and a monster game. And as it was, he scored two touchdowns. He made some good plays. He looks like they're getting him the role that they thought they were going to get. But here's my question for you on a related topic in the wide receiver translator.
Wide receiver translator.
And this is the thing that I think we kind of wondered how it was going to go. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Hopkins now, after two games and the injury, has not been very involved in the offense. One catch each game, and I think you noticed a little body language of a guy that is used to being targeted 10 or 12 times a game. Now, there are he knows he's not 100% yet. Mm-hmm. Brian Callahan is already trying to massage this, right? So how do you see this going, especially with them sitting at 0-2 in a year that I've said from the start is an exploratory year? I think it's a rebuild. My expectations are not super high. So where do you see DeAndre Hopkins unfolding here?
Okay, I'm going to say this, and it is what it is. If it gets back to Hop, so be it.
No disclaimers. Let it rip, Derek.
No, it's nothing bad about him, per se, about his play, necessarily. But if it continues to go this way, as it has been going, we have we got another month before the trade deadline. If it continues to go the way it has been going, where he's not in the game much, he's not being involved in the offense for whatever reason. You saw after the first catch for 9 yards, the only catch, he got targeted a second time. But his only catch, he comes back and he has this look. He's not going to say anything. Believe me, I've done the same thing.
You know the feeling.
I know the feeling. I know the gesture. So you can sit there and say, oh, that's not the case. You act as if I hadn't played the position before and I wasn't in those situations before and I haven't seen other guys in those situations and I know what they're thinking because they come and tell me. You saw his face after that catch. It's like, oh, I got one catch. Like, seriously? In this mind, you need to be throwing me the ball more. I've been open other times. You just now throw me the ball on a 9-yard completion. Seriously, comes back to the huddle. Calvin Ridley gives them dap to keep him in the game. I know all of this because either I have done it to somebody or somebody has done it to me, trying to keep me in the game. Let's go, Mace. Good catch. 9 yards, I know. But good catch. Let's stand. Or I've done it to somebody else. When you've been the focal point of every offense that you've been in your career, every offense, Hop has been the number one target in every offense he's been. And when you're not the number one, and frankly, you're not even number two, you have a problem with that. Again, I'm not saying that D-Hop is going to go to the newspaper or start leaking stuff. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is this. If it doesn't change before the trade deadline, be expecting something to happen. Something's going to come out of that building that states D-Hop wants to be moved. I'm not saying he's going to say it. I'm not saying the Titans are thinking about it.
There are ways.
For things to get out to make it seem that Hop is not happy with his role in his offense. I'm completely healthy. I have no residual effects of the knee injury. You got to talk to the coordinator. I'm out here playing football. I'm trying to help the team. That's what it's going to come down to. I'm telling y'all right now. If it doesn't change, I'm saying if it doesn't change. If it changed status, you move on. You know, the first two games didn't mean anything. Now I'm a part of the offense. Now I'm happy. We're winning, we're losing. It doesn't matter. I'm happy. Okay? But if things doesn't change with him and you involving him in the offense, best believe something will come out of that building stating that either he's unhappy with his role in the offense or he wants to be traded. He is closer to retirement than not. This guy wants a championship. He's not in it just to be in it. He wants a championship. And if this team doesn't look as if they're in a position to make the playoffs, best believe there will be words coming out of that building somehow, some way, where he may be on the trading blocks. I'm not saying that he will. I'm not saying it's going to be him that's putting this out. But a guy that has been the number one option for 10 of the 11 years of his career, all of a sudden, he's the number three or number four option, and you're losing? Nah, he's going to want out of there.
The NFL trade deadline is after week 9, November 5th. So after week 9 games is the NFL trade deadline, the Tuesday after week 9 games, which is November 5th. And I know that Hopkins was compromised physically last week. He did not appear to be 100%. Remember, Taylor Lewan said on the Bus with the Boys podcast that Hopkins wasn't going to play. He was active. He wasn't too involved in the offense. He only ran 7 routes against the Bears.
But didn't he say I was good? He said I was good. He said this week he was good. And
I believe it more this week than last week. But my point is, he has run 23 routes in 2 games. Mm-hmm. He has been targeted 3 times. That is a target share of 13%. For context, last season, he was targeted on 28.2% of his routes.
Will Levis is suffering. Well, D-Hop is sort of collateral. It's like collateral damage in all of this. Mm-hmm. D-Hop is the collateral damage in all of this. You know why? Because last year, D-Hop, you brought him in to be your number one option. So everybody, whatever quarterback was underneath center, they deferred to him. And I even said last year, you can't do that. You can't. You got to find other guys to throw to. Why? Because your offense can't run the way it needs to run if you're just solely on one guy.
Especially at this stage of his career.
Exactly. He's not a young pup here. He's not. So he's sort of by way experiencing what those guys experienced last year. Chris Moore, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Treylon Burks, everybody outside of D-Hop. How many times I said D-Hop got targeted last year? Over 100 times. What was the next closest guy? And it was a receiver or a tight end. 40-something targets. Will Levis needs to find a way, because now they brought in another number one option for him, Ridley. And they're saying in his mind, I got to get the ball to Ridley all the time. Every time I take a snap back, I'm looking at Ridley first more times than not. And then I'm sort of going through everybody else. Well, if your main goal is to try to get your number one guy the ball, especially if you're third in line for the football, you may not ever get it. And now D-Hop is experiencing what Chris Moore experienced last year, what Nick Westbrook-Ikhine experienced last year, and what Treylon Burks experienced last year. When you have a number one option, they're going to defer to him than to you. I don't care how good you have been playing D-Hop last year. They got them a new, brand new toy, and Will Levis is going to do any and everything to get that new toy the ball. He's not looking at you, because there were a few times D-Hop was open. They could have just threw it to him and got 6-7 yards. But he looked at D-Hop, and then he looked long. And then when he tried to come back to D-Hop, you couldn't. So you're suffering from what the guys last year suffered from. You're not the number one guy anymore. And you have to face the facts. You're not even number two. You're number three.
DeAndre Hopkins was targeted 137 times last season. The next closest wide receiver was Nick Westbrook-Ikhine with 45 targets.
Yep.
And it's not his fault. It's not D-Hop's fault.
In between, Chigakonko had 77 and Tajay Spears had 70. But in terms of receivers. Hopkins, 137. Westbrook, Akine, 45.
And that's what it's going to end up being once again. It's going to end up being this unbalanced in your receiving core where Calvin Ridley, again, just like I said about D-Hop, I understand because he's your number one guy. You paid him all his money. You brought him in. You got to target him. So I understand it, but it's going to be lopsided once again unless Brian Callahan drills into Will Levis' head. Use the whole field. Don't try to just get it to one guy each and every time. Use the tools that you have. That's why we brought them all in. He hadn't figured that out in 2 years. He hasn't figured that out. What makes you think he's going to figure it out moving forward?
615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. Tune into the Chase and Big Joe show from 9 to 11 a.m. tomorrow for your chance to win all-inclusive tickets in the Eurostone Club to see Kings of Leon live at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, September 26th. Contest presented by Green River Whiskey, Green River Distilling Company, Owensboro, Kentucky. Alcohol volume varies by product. Please drink responsibly.
You mentioned earlier about kind of your reaction to Will's fumble. Mm-hmm. Obviously drew a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Do you think there's some adjustment period for you, maybe being a head coach now and knowing that the camera is going to be on you a lot more? And does that?
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair point. You know? Yeah, I mean, I'm generally pretty composed. I think you guys have seen that for the most part. You know, that one set me off. And I'm human like everybody else. I have blackout moments where I'll lose my mind. I try not to. I try my best to keep it together. But that one was hard for me to watch in the moment. And yeah, I got to have a little bit better awareness that there's cameras on me. And you know, I'm not up in the box yelling at anybody. I'm right there in the front of everything, and the cameras are pointed right at me. So probably a little bit of a lesson learned for me in that regard. Don't regret my feelings about it, but yeah, I'm sure there's some things I could probably do better when it comes to that.
Why do you need to be different there? What's wrong with that? You're being human in the moment. Everyone's thinking that.
Sure.
What's wrong with it?
I don't think anything's wrong with it. I don't want to get to points where like I stand up a player on television and I make it about them and not about us. And I think those things, I could do a better job with that. I'm not going to promise you that I'm going to be able to every time. I am emotional enough at times, especially on game day where, you know, when things go wrong, you get either excited or you get angry and that's how it happens. But, you know, I don't want to do that to Will. That's not fair to Will in that particular case. It's not how I want to be perceived and considered. I think outside of this, you know, I think people that don't know me and that's the only thing they see is that. That's probably the best way to put it. I don't regret my feelings about it and how I felt in the moment. I just think I can do a better job. Just like I ask our players to control their emotions, I probably should control mine a little bit.
That was Brian Callahan earlier today at his news conference talking about that viral moment when the cameras caught him saying, "Hey, what the F are you doing?" Not using F, of course, used a different word, to Will Levis after his fumble. And I think most Titans fans could relate to Brian Callahan in that moment. But it's interesting to hear a rookie head coach who is in the spotlight for the first time. When that mistake happens, the camera is going to him. When he was an offensive coordinator or a quarterback's coach and something like that happens, the cameras aren't looking for Brian Callahan. Now they're looking for Brian Callahan. And I think it's interesting to hear a rookie head coach talk about, you know, how he comports himself on the field, not wanting to disregard the emotions he's having, but maybe being more cognizant of the fact that everybody's looking at him now when he says those things.
Well, that's just one of those situations where time on task, you learn as you go. You know, you could have been, and I'm sure he has been prepped to be a head coach, but they can't prep you. You know, it's hard to prep someone for every emotion that you're going to have as a head coach. He addressed it. He said he can be better. And he's choosing to move on from that. But he said what was right was, listen, I'm not apologizing for the way I felt about the play. By no means am I doing that. I'm just apologizing that I allowed y'all to see my frustration. The frustration is still there, whether he would have been yelling or not. I know plenty of coaches that they look so calm, and then you come back to the huddle, and they look at you like, have you forgotten to play football? Seriously? And then once we get in the meeting room, then we address you in regards to that play. But it's not like these things are not going on in his head. It just came out. And I'm glad it did, because there comes a point where, just like a player, there has to be some emotion there. Like, especially if I'm telling you over, and that's like a receiver dropping a pass over and over again. Eventually, that's a quarterback. I'm going to come over and you're like, what's going on? Or you're running the wrong route. Like, what's going on? We've told you a million times to run it this way, and you're not running it that way. And you know what the quarterback's going to do? Not only is he going to get mad at you, he's going to say, I don't want this guy in the game anymore. I can't trust that he's going to be in the position that I want him to be in.
I love the reaction by Callahan in reflection. This is a coach in his second game as a head coach. He is a guy that has been in the press box in the past, I don't know how many years, like years and years. He said before the first game, he said, I haven't been on the sidelines for a game in a long, long time. So I like that he's self-evaluating and saying, could I have handled that better? When every fan loves the reaction there, because they had the same thought that he did. But I like that he's saying, look, I, as the leader of the team, as the coach, as the guy that's trying to get the best out of this, I don't think it's good to show up the quarterback there. And he did. He showed him up. And I think there would be a lot of athletes that if you did that to them, you would have a pretty visceral reaction. You could have a shouting match, right? I have seen that, right? You never show me up. You know, that kind of thing happens. And it leads to bad things. So I like that Callahan did it, and he said it perfectly.
There's two guys, there's two positions you cannot, where you really think long and hard before you sort of show them up, quote unquote, on the field. One is the kicker, and one is the quarterback. Those two guys.
I wouldn't have guessed kicker.
You can't do it to kicker. As much as you may be upset with them, you can't show him up on the field, because kickers, it's a fickle position.
They're like goalies.
Yes, like goalie is like, you know, a golfer when he's putting. It's just like,
it doesn't make it better.
It doesn't make it any better by yelling and screaming at him. It doesn't. What you just hope that you can come back to the sideline, look at him like he's crazy, go over what you need to go over, and hope that the way you're saying it, it gets embedded in his brain, whether it be a PAT kick, a place kicker, or a quarterback. Those are two guys, if you get too much in their head, they're through.
David on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I yelled the same question in terms
We all did, in our own words.
Right? I don't blame Brian Callahan. But there is an interesting question from Jeff on our text line as it relates to the DeAndre Hopkins situation that Derek was just breaking down. He says, quote, the Hopkins situation is just more evidence that the Titans just plug holes according to immediate needs to field a team with no plans for long-term success by building a winning team. This is why they are perennial losers and garner little respect from NFL insiders. It all starts at the top. What do you think about that?
I think they went out and they addressed the positions the best they sort of know how, considering what everybody else was doing. They went out and got one of the top wide receivers in the free agent market. And up until this point, he's proven that, yeah, we paid him the money, and we're so far so good. Now, he could have came up with the deep pass, but everything else, so far so good. He has two touchdowns, one receiving, and one rushing. So we're getting so far so good. Our money's worth. You go to Cushenberry, he's playing well. They're not just plugging holes. They're plugging holes with guys that they feel has a lot still left in the tank, or enough to where we can transition into younger guys. You go get a Ridley because he's young enough. He's old enough to have the veteran leadership and or whatnot, or the veteran wisdom, but he's young enough that we can have him for 3-4 years while we try to upgrade that position slowly. They're going to upgrade the wide receiver position, best believe, in the draft. And they're going to do it with more than just one player. They're going to do it with two wide receivers, whether it be in the first round and in the third round, or in the second round and in the third round. They're going to address this position because they need to. So I mean, I don't agree with what he said because of these guys that they have plugged in. They're doing a good job. Snead's doing a good job. Cheeto's doing a good job. Ernest Jones. Murray's doing a good job.
I like Ernest Jones. Yeah.
Murray's doing a good job. He did give up a touchdown pass. But, I mean, for the most part, he's doing a good job. So they're not just filling holes to be filling holes.
We do have some interesting news that just broke in the NFL, and I think this would be a good jumping off point for a conversation later. According to Tom Pelissero's sources, the Panthers are benching Bryce Young. According to Tom Pelissero, the Panthers are benching Bryce Young and starting Andy Dalton beginning this week.
I think it's just he's had enough. It's like a TKO. Like, they just can't support him. They can't protect him. They have nothing around him. And it's a tough, tough dilemma. I don't blame them for trying this for a few weeks, just trying to reset. What his numbers are so bad. You just can't keep running him out there. It's like a this is what you have the luxury of in hockey or baseball, where you can send a guy to the minors to get his confidence back. You can't do that in football other than to sit him.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that they're even, you know, putting that out there. And obviously, we haven't heard official words from the Carolina Panthers that that's indeed what they're doing. But for it to be even out there is a bad thing. And which brings me back to Will Levis. The Carolina Panthers, if indeed it happens, they are saying, you know what? We're going to stop this train right now before we move. We're going to stop it right now. We're going to go to our backup, and we're going to let the season play out, because it doesn't seem like under the conditions right now that this young man is going to be able to thrive. We need to get a veteran quarterback in there, a guy that has seen a lot. And it may not get better, but at least the quarterback we're putting in, Andy Dalton, he's experienced a lot of things, so he may be able to work his way out of this. And I say Will Levis is because you're going to – if play doesn't get better, or if he's continuing to do these things that is costing you the game, you're going to come to a quote-unquote sort of come-to-Jesus moment as well. Do we – stick with the quarterback we have now, or do we go with the veteran backup and sort of try to salvage our season, all knowing that we may have to get another quarterback in the draft? Because once you make that decision, and Will Levis is in a better predicament than Bryce Young. Will Levis has talent around him, and that is the big problem I have here. You have talent around you, and you're still looking bad. At times, you're still making these mistakes. So I don't know if we can coach you out of this. We damn sure can't bring in other players, because it seems like no matter who we bring in, you are still going to do what you want to do when it comes down to those moments that we need you to do the smart thing. You're going to do the Will Levis thing, which means you're going to cough up the football.
So the news, according to Tom Pelissero, the Panthers are benching former number one overall pick Bryce Young and starting Andy Dalton. I believe the Panthers are at the Raiders this week. But that's a good jumping off point for a topic we're going to get to in the third hour. But before we get to that, our friend Teron Davenport of ESPN will join us for his weekly conversation. We'll get Teron's thoughts on everything that happened yesterday in the Titans' 24-17 loss to the New York Jets. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.